You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
For give or take 25 years, students of the engineering school at the University of Auckland celebrated their capping day ceremony in part by dressing up in grass skirts, sometimes painting their faces brown, donning fake taiaha and performing a fake haka amidst drinking and partying. For most of those years, they were asked by students and the Māori Association politely to discontinue the racist activity of wearing a culture as an offensive costume. In 1979, protesters outside of the university confronted the group to end the practice once and for all. Hone Harawira was one of those people. I spoke to him on the history of the practice and the conflict itself. After he was satisfied with my reasons for covering this as a story, I asked him what his experience of the day was.
Well, bit of background.
Yep.
The engineering students had been doing a mock haka since the 1950s. That.
Yeah, I've seen a picture from 1955.
Yeah. And I know representations had gone up from the Māori Club, from the Māori Students Association, from the Māori Vice-Chancellor, from the Vice-Chancellor. Everybody from the Students Association had tried to either tame it down or put an end to it, but they never bothered listening. The year, God, when was it? Was it 79?
79 is what... Yeah, the internet tells me, yeah.
Yeah. So the year before, my wife tried to stop Hilda, and there's a really good photo of her confronting these big Pākehā boys.
I've seen that photo too. It's her back and them facing the camera.
Yeah, with a lovely Pacific Island shirt on.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was her trying to stop it. And the next year, she got the Māori Club to go with her. The students told her, piss off.
Mm.
Came home, told me. So I rounded up guys that I knew who weren't at university and were not likely to be affected by whatever happened at university.
Mm.
Māori and Pacific Island men and women.
Mm.
We gathered on the morning at my place in Ponsonby. Now we left about, I think it must have been about 7:30. We had to get up there by 8 o'clock because they drink, eh? They start drinking real early, and by the time they're hitting the road about 10, 11 o'clock, they're drunk as. So we got up there early. The plan was to tell them to take them off. Somebody walked in and told them to take them off. They told him to get stuff or words to that effect.
Mm.
And when he said it, there was only about 3 of us in the room. And we found out in court later there was 51 of them. I think of the 21 of us who went, 14 of us got into the ring. And we did whatever we had to do to stop them going ahead with it. Took all of the grass skirts off them.
Yep.
Gave them a few messages. Please don't do this again.
Mm.
And left the room. Gave them a hiding, actually. Gave a few of them a hiding. I mean, people had been asking politely for years, right?
Mm.
Politely. So we decided we were going to put an end to it that day. And we went in and we stopped it from happening.
Mm.
So, it's never happened again since.
Yeah, it really astounded me just how long it was allowed to be done. It just...
Almost 25 years.
Yeah, it's such a long time. It shouldn't have happened once.
Yeah, so that's what happened. The people who went, apart from my wife, none of us were at university.
Mm.
And the reason why is because the Māori Club were a bit concerned that if they were to do anything, it might affect them getting their marae, which they didn't have at that time.
Mm.
And they were applying for it. So they were a bit nervous about causing strife at the university. My wife was really upset about that. So I decided, well, I won't go and ask any of them because they just might get down there and tell us not to do it. So I just rounded up people I'd met at Bastion Point, people I'd met from Otara, people I'd met from the Polynesian Panthers and Ponsonby, a couple of gangsters. Just people I knew would step up and do what needed to be done. So that's the group we got together.
I was lectured by Teo Peter McDowell, and he kind of told our whole class basically that, what you have just told us. And, yeah, I was, like I said, I was just really, it was a revelation for me. But also what really stood out was the difference in treatment or the outcomes of that day between protesters and engineering students.
Yeah, absolutely.
What happened to protesters and what happened to students?
That there was the newspaper of the time in Auckland was called the Auckland Star. Our action took place between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning, I think. Only lasted about 2 or 3 minutes. But the headline on the Auckland Star of the Auckland Star that evening was Gang Rampage at University on the front page of the paper. So, I mean, nothing's changed really, eh? I mean, they still see a Maori action or Pacific Island action or Polynesian action, and they tend to write it up as being something super scary when really was nothing to it. In there, smack a few people around, take the grass skirts, leave the building, burn them, make sure they could never use them again.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up, actually, of those of us who got arrested over the next couple of days, I think of the about 11 or 12 of us that got arrested, I think 11, 12, maybe 10, 10 or 11, maybe 10 got beaten up and beaten up severely.
I think
one woman may have lost her unborn baby as a result.
Oh, my God. Mm. Is that by engineering students or by authorities?
No, by the police.
Yeah.
By the keepers of the law.
Mm.
I mean, that's how they got confessions back in those days. They didn't sit down and ask you intelligent questions. They took you on the back and threw you up against the wall. Mm. And when you backed up, they threw you against another wall. That's how they operated.
You've already kind of mentioned this, but do you think at all this country has moved on in any way since then?
No, not really. People say, oh, now it's a lot better and da-da-da-da-da, but I genuinely don't think so.
Mm.
I think that the Trump mania in the US and the Don Brash mania over here and the support that he continues to get from Pākehā New Zealand suggests that it's as deeply held in 2018 as it was in 1978. Yeah, I mean, people like to say things are better. You know, there's a lot more reo going on. There's a lot more engagement with Pacifica and Māori in society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when you look at the statistics, I mean, a little black kid, Māori or Pacifica, walking down a street with a white kid, and the stats tell us that the kid that's going to get stopped by the police is going to be the black one. Gets questioned is the black one. Gets taken in is the black one.
Yeah.
Gets charged with anything is the black one. Ends up in court is the black one. Ends up getting convicted is the black one. Ends up going to jail is the black one. Gets the longest sentence is the black one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, right through all of that side of things, that still hasn't changed. Unemployment is still the same. First one's fired, last one's hired. We're still in that category. The homeless are us. Those being forced out of education are still us. So we've now got, I think, 25 Māori MPs in Parliament, and I'd say at least a half a dozen PI ones, and yet nothing's changed. Nothing's changed because when you get to that level, people tend to be squashed by either parliamentary politics or party politics, and the good fighters that a lot of them genuinely were when they went in Parliament gets destroyed once they get in. So the power structure hasn't changed much.
Mm. So you think the power structure is the thing that then changes like a public's perception?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, they're talking about how MPs talking about Māori language in schools and saying it shouldn't be compulsory because nobody learns language if it's compulsory.
Mm.
But that's bullshit. I mean, if that was true, how come all of us Māoris and Pacific Islanders can speak pretty good English? You know, we do because they make English compulsory on us. I absolutely guarantee that if they made Māori compulsory in this country, everybody would be speaking Māori a lot better really, really quickly.
Mm.
But the power structure doesn't allow it to happen. And they are aided and abetted by what I would call weak-kneed Māori politicians in this regard who won't stand up for the reo. Who talk tough about the reo, but push come to shove in Parliament, they won't do anything about it. So that's unfortunate. But yeah, we just have to keep being strong, being positive, being open about it too. You know, not being nasty and aggressive and harsh all the time. Being positive with one another, being helpful with one another. So here's another example of how the power structure really doesn't get it. I'm going down to support the Kiwis on Saturday in the rugby league. But the New Zealand Rugby League really flipped last year when Tonga jumped out and went out on their own. And instead of embracing that and saying to the world, okay, that 23 are playing for Tonga and congratulations to them. But instead of doing that, New Zealand treated Tonga like an enemy, refused to give them a game, refused to engage with them at all. Now, I'm going down to watch the Kiwis on Saturday. I understand it's going to be about 15, 16,000 people there. Next week, Tonga is playing against Australia and it's a 4 hours. You know what I mean? And that's because even in rugby league, the power structure doesn't get it. That we, as Māori and Pacifica, have a lot to offer to our society, but the power structure won't allow it to happen. They want to maintain control and command as to how the world operates. Rugby league, rugby, it's all pretty much the same. Society runs along those lines. And our job, your job, and what you do, my job, and what I do, our job is to keep highlighting the difference, but to try and keep pushing our people forward so that as more and more of our people are out there and our faces and our language and our styles and our actions become normalised in this society.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.